Well, hello everybody and welcome. You have tuned in to episode number 372 of the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet. This is Linux in the Ham Shack, and we have a great short topics episode for you tonight. We will cover some amateur radio, we'll cover some open source, we'll blend them together in Linux in the Ham Shack. We'll do our social media roundup and let everybody know who helps out the show, and then we'll get on our way. And we want to say thank you for everybody who's listening. But before we dive right into it, let's go ahead and introduce ourselves. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
I'm Bill, NE4RD.
Oh, yeah, and the other guy, K. Richard, KB5JBV.
Who's a little out of practice, apparently.
still a little out of practice.
All right. Well, it's good to have Richard back. He's rapidly become a semi-permanent fixture on the show once again. It only took him 260 episodes plus.
But that's okay. Better late than never.
Eight years.
Yep. It's been a while. It's
been that long. However, I do want everybody to know that not only have we moved from Kaufman County to Dallas County and then back to Kaufman County again, but it's a beautiful time here in semi-east Texas. The leaves are starting to turn red, and all the critters are starting to hibernate for the winter. The gators have started shedding their skin, and the semi-annual hobo migration is currently underway. So for those of y'all that have been worried about East Texas, there you go.
Can't say that I know anybody who's been worried about East Texas. That being said, let's move into our lead topic for tonight. And I know, because it's the Boy Scouts of America, that Bill is itching to talk about it. So Bill, go for it.
Oh, of course. And yes, we're talking about Jamboree on the Air and Jamboree on the Internet. And it's here. It's coming this weekend. Jamboree on the Air is the largest scouting event in the world and is coming this weekend, October 16th through the 18th. In a typical year, more than 1 million scouts participate, with over 11,000 stations operated by 20,000 plus amateur radio operators in operation from 150 plus countries around the world. Of course, with COVID-19 in play, there are a variety of obstacles and precautions that need to be adhered to. So check out the K2BSA's website. We have a link to a lot of general information on COVID-19 and scouting. And if you haven't registered yet, get on over to the Joda Jody site and get your registration in. And I've got a couple links in the show notes to help you get that. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting year. A lot of people are trying to do virtual, connecting their amateur radios via Zoom and everything else. So I'm kind of excited to see exactly how it all turns out. We know here doing a podcast, you know, piping audio around is a complex process. So find the right tools and you can most likely do it. where you have a little less restrictions, of course, follow the guidelines of your counties, your cities, your councils, your districts, and let's just keep everybody safe and let's have a good event.
Yeah, I signed up and registered and all that stuff last year and then didn't really operate. So we'll see what happens this year. Maybe I can do a little bit better. I'd like to work out my 7100 a little more.
Yeah. So. That'd be nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, everybody listening, y'all do need to hop on the Yoda stations while they've got this going on, because that's one of the ways we grow the hobby. And these guys, these kids, man, they're really fantastic operators when they get their licenses going and stuff. So it's well worth your time to get in there and talk with them a little bit.
Yeah, we've always been hot on keeping the hobby active and getting more people into it. So, and this is definitely a good way to it, because you know, the Boy Scouts, they force these kids into playing with radios and stuff. So
here's a radio, fire it up and talk to somebody, damn it.
Yep, as they're handcuffed to a radio. All right, so moving on from Joe to Jody, which should be a fun event this year despite the pandemic. We'll move into some amateur radio topics, and the first one we have tonight is a revised IARU Region 2 band plan is now available, and everybody knows what the IARU regions are, right?
Yeah, region two is us.
Yeah, region two is we. Yeah. We don't get to be first fiddle in the IARU. We're second fiddle. No.
Yeah, we're North and South America will be region two.
This includes the change approved at the General Assembly meetings in Lima in October 2019 to add an amateur radio satellite uplink subband from 21.125 to 21.450 kilohertz. That's 21.125 to 21.45 megahertz on a non-exclusive basis, which matches similar changes in IARU region 1 and 3. In addition, a number of administrative changes have also been made to the text. The band plan itself has not been modified. These changes include modifications to the wording of the band plan to ensure that national regulators understand that it is a voluntary document and that countries may make departures from the band plan based on national requirements. Definitions additions include amateur radio direction finding, primary service, secondary service, and several acronyms. We love them acronyms. Inclusion of information detailing the primary and secondary users in each amateur band, and the correction of minor typographical errors. Oh, can't believe there are those in there. Anyway, that came from the IARU Region 2, that's us, website. And a link, of course, will be in the show notes. So cool. Are you busy over there? Yes, she's busy over there. So I won't ask her to read the story. Maybe we should ask Richard to read the story. I know he can read poorly, just like we do.
I want you to know it's been a long time since I've read show notes while I was actually doing a recording. It's not going to be great. However,
let me say that do you wear glasses? Yes, you do, right?
All the time.
Okay, take them off. You'll do better.
In fact, I have 16 pairs all for one thing or the other. I like the ones that have naked ladies on them. However, the FCC deletes 3.4 gigahertz amateur satellite band service allocation. At its opening meeting on September 30th, 2020, I'm stuck in the last century. The Federal Communications Commission adopted a report to order that sunsets the amateur radio use of the 3.3 to 3.5 gigahertz band. The spectrum includes the 3.41 gigahertz amateur radio satellite service allocation. AMSAT had previously filed comments opposing the FCC's proposal to delete the spectrum. The adopted report and order can be found at, oh good lord, HTTP.
We just put it in the show notes.
Okay, y'all look for it in the show notes. Okay, and source, same as above. Now, I was actually looking at this story today, and that's the biggest problem I'm seeing. Recently, I spoke about on one of the other shows, the fact that we are spreading ourselves out to the point that we may start losing spectrum, and I see this as a precursor to that. A lot of the guys that are listening now don't remember when we lost part of the 220 band. But it's really easy. The FCC, all they have to do is tell us we can't use it anymore and we can't use it. And if we don't keep it populated, then we will end up losing it. And now I'm going to take my soapbox and slide it back under the desk.
Well, I'm sure that 3.4 gigahertz is not a very popular band in use just due to the complications of actually getting the equipment to do that, because there really isn't any.
Although I think Tony is single-handedly keeping 220 alive, so
yeah. No, we have some guys here in town too that do 220. It's like you got a 220 handheld and they got one 220 repeater, so
I said on the last show, we had a club just install a 220 repeater, I think. So
yeah, back down in Florida we use 220 for Lincoln repeaters quite often, so that's about the only use that we ever used it for.
Well, yeah. The other side of it is that we slowly lose these allocations. That doesn't stop them from coming and getting the ones that do have more traffic. They've tried more than one. Microsoft tried to take part of our 70-centimeter band back in the 90s for little LEO satellites, is what they were going to call them, lower Earth orbiting satellites. which is what Elon Musk is doing right now, but he's not trying to take part of our band allocations away.
Yeah. What is it? Starlink?
Starlink, yeah.
Yeah, Starlink's a new thing. There's going to be how many of those damn things? Like 1,000?
Oh, good Lord. They're throwing 40 to 70 out on every mission right now. I have no idea how many there's going to be.
It's going to be a lot. There's going to be a lot of clutter up there. All right, Bill, tell us about the ORI.
Yeah, I found this story in relationship to a later story we'll also talk about, but I was just looking at the grants that were approved through the ARDC. But the Open Research Institute P4XT Phase 2 grant is funded. The goal of this project is to provide both designs and equipment for advanced, accessible, and enjoyable amateur radio system that will operate a 5 gigahertz uplink and a 10 gigahertz downlink. Modern and relevant digital communication techniques will be enthusiastically employed to create a powerful and useful communication system that all amateurs can enjoy. Many dozens of simultaneous users can take advantage of the high bandwidth digital multimedia communications. The system can be configured for thousands of simultaneous voice users. Legacy modes can be supported as well. Any uplink channel can be designated as a legacy analog mode and the channel transported through the payload. The amount of this grant was 507,000 big ones. So $500,000 got given to the ORI for its full program. So the links to both the ARDC awards page and the ORI proposal are in the show notes.
All right, very good. Money coming this way for open projects and amateur radio on some of the super ultra high frequency stuff. So
cool. Yeah, I think this is kind of like in preparation for that QO100 satellite that's over top of Africa that we can't use.
Right.
Well, I think we're destined to get one that's very similar. So that'll be kind of all within the same context as that.
I imagine it'll take, if we ever get a geosync amateur radio satellite, it'll take 2 years before you can actually get onto it because it's just going to be so busy. It'd be crazy.
I don't know. I think they've done pretty well with the QO100. So so far, so good.
Yeah. Excellent. So those are our amateur radio focus topics for the evening. So let's slip on into some open source. And the first thing we're going to talk about is some legalese. And this is the Supreme Court is taking on Google and Oracle one last time. Crazy, these people. 10 years after Oracle first sued Google over the code in the Android platform, the two tech giants are finally facing off in the Supreme Court. Since then, there have been 3 trials and 2 appeals. Billions of dollars are at stake. Many millions will likely be spent and have likely been spent on a parade of seasoned litigators, expert witnesses, and bizarre trial exhibits. We need examples. Intended to explain programming to non-technical juries. All this may be coming to an anticlimactic close on Wednesday morning with a teleconference Supreme Court oral argument in the middle of a pandemic. Ooh. Tom Holwerda, comments on this, Google must win this case. That's okay. Not because Google somehow deserves it, but because Oracle and its CEO are the scum of the earth, dead set on destroying the very foundations of programming. Wow, that's a resounding endorsement of that. that made it worth reading. So the source on this was
guy.
OS News. Oh, yeah, he doesn't pull any punches, does he? The source is OS News, and the link will be in the show notes, and a full transcript of the Supreme Court conference, whatever, is also linked in the show notes. So there you go.
Yeah, they've already had this. This was just a few days ago as we're recording this. And, it's quite interesting listening to the back and forth between the justices and the 3 attorneys that were counsel for this particular case. And some of it is interesting just because you can tell that the justices did spend some time studying this quite in detail. And they're trying to come up with, analogies and stuff that makes sense. And like they said there, it's really hard to get into the guts of the programming side of this stuff without having a lot of technical detail. But the transcript is available for text, and you know, they also have a full recording of the conference as well. And there are some interesting comments and stuff like that about fair use and whatnot. And I know we've talked about this in the past. And although this is not technically an open source topic, the impact of this particular case could change the way you interact with other programs. With some of the new case law that this would create.
All right. So we don't want to get bogged down in legalese, but apparently Google needs to win. So we'll see how the Supreme Court decides on that matter when they actually render their judgments. So that being said, let's move on to a Linux graphical application for the Windows 6
system. I do have one more comment on the last story. Oracle, suck it. Okay, go ahead.
You could have just thrown that in anywhere. You didn't have to ask. You know, it's not like
anybody that's been the industry knows that Oracle is you know, the devil reincarnate.
All right, so talk about WSL, Bill.
Sure, yeah. Linux graphical apps are coming to the Windows subsystem for Linux. At the Microsoft Build 2020 Virtual Developers Conference, CEO Satya Nadella announced that Windows subsystem for Linux 2.0 would soon support Linux GUI and applications. That day is closer now than ever before. At the recent Xorg Developers Conference, XDC, Microsoft partner developer lead Steve Provenost revealed that Microsoft has made it possible to run graphical Linux applications with WSL. It's always been possible to run Linux graphical programs such as the GIMP graphics editor, Evolution email client, and LibreOffice on WSL, but it wasn't easy. You had to install a third-party X-Window display server such as VCXRSRV, like we talked about in the past, Windows X Server and Windows 10, and then do some tuning with both Windows and Linux to get them to work together smoothly. The X Window system underlies almost all Linux graphical user interfaces. Now Microsoft has ported a Wayland display server to WSL. Wayland is the most popular X Windows compatible server. In WSL 2, it connects the graphical Linux applications via a remote desktop protocol connection to the main Windows display. This means you can run Linux and Windows GUI applications simultaneously on the same desktop screen. And let's see, do I want to read any more of this? Blah, blah, blah. I'll read the last one. Okay. Don't get too excited about it just yet, though. Lowen continued. We don't have an ETA yet for the beta channel. However, this work will be available in general for insiders to try within the next couple of months. So if you're already on the beta builds of the Windows Insider or whatever they're really calling that program now, I can't remember. You'll probably get this feature a little bit sooner than later, and you can definitely play around with it. Who keeps taking my extra spaces out?
I take your extra spaces out. The internet doesn't like double spaces.
I don't care about the internet. Jeez. When you're in monospace, I feel like I'm on a typewriter, so I have to put two spaces after a colon. I feel legally obligated.
Cheryl gave you the thumbs up, and you have to understand, I understand that the style book says that a colon should be separated by two spaces. I know. I get it.
Damn it.
But the internet doesn't do double spaces, so
technology sucks.
Exactly. Thank you for repeating my mantra. And finally, we have. Let's see. Do you want to tackle this one, Richard? You're going to get through it like tonight?
Oh, good Lord! Let me stumble through this bastard. Right. Oh, wait a minute! I just created a badger, didn't I? Oh well.
We don't badger anymore. You know, it's funny that the header on the website has said 3% more badgers for a very, very long time now, but we gave up on badgers quite a while ago. So
that's so sad.
Well, I mean, they get thrown in every once in a while, or we manually insert them by saying badger instead of the thing we're thinking. But
it's hard for me to say stuff now. No, the badger's not there. Oh, no,
you can say whatever you want. We just don't edit anymore.
Oh, well, what the hell? Controversy.
controversy? Concern. Right. I think we're going to have to cut you off at the first word.
I'm sorry. I apparently have been far too. Yeah. Okay. Let's try this again. Conservancy announces new strategy for GPL enforcement. Software Freedom Conservancy, I can't even talk tonight, guys. The only organization actively engaged in general public license, GPL, enforcement and compliance work for Linux announces today. See, y'all got me cold reading this, and I'm out of practice.
Well, Bill's the one who cut and paste these, and he cold reads them every time. So we don't know anything that's going on. So
he's used to it. I haven't done this in a long time. Anyway, they announced today a new strategy towards improving compliance and the freedom of users of devices that contain Linux-based systems. The new work has received a initial grant from the Amateur Radio Digital Communications, ARDC. Copyleft enforcement ensures, I'm just like fucking zoning. Oh, another badger. ensures software freedom for all. Copyleft licenses require distribution to provide complete source code, including installation instructions. Without this, we do not control the software that surrounds us. Whether we want to fix simple bugs, remove functionality to protect our privacy, or completely replace device firmware, we need the ability to modify and reinstall the software on our devices. Today, Conservancy announces it is undertaking a new multi-pronged approach to our copyleft compliance work. Our new initiative features, here's the features, litigation to enforce against license violators that do not voluntarily comply in a timely manner, coordinating the development of an alternative firmware for devices where none currently exist, collaborating with other organizations to promote copyleft compliance as a feature for consumers to protect their privacy and get more out of their devices. And that's going to be over at https://url/bcts.info/phsfconservancy. Now, see, y'all, I told y'all I was out of practice.
You told us you were, there was a slight pause right before you said out of practice, and I thought you were going to say drunk, but...
Not yet. There wasn't enough here to make that happen.
No, because if you were drunk, you would have read it much better. We find that usually happens here. So
a hell of a lot better. In fact, quite honestly, I've been looking at weed.
Yeah, well, there's enough of it around here. We can get contact high pretty much every day of the week. So anyway, Bill, do you want to comment on this, or is this a cold read for you too?
Which one? The
Software Conservancy. No. The story we're still on.
Oh, no.
God help us. Get us out of here, please.
Do I want to comment?
It's funny. Richard says the things we think.
It's not funny. You're not used to it anymore.
Well, no, I was just interested in the actual, what was I going to say? Darn. I'm like, blah. I was interested in
brain fart
in the link between the Linux stuff and of course amateur radio. And I almost made this like the hybrid topic because it sort of is because it brings together, the amateur radio digital communications, 501c3, people, with this particular group to help enforce open source values inside of, amateur radio stuff as well. So yeah, I thought it was kind of an interesting find, and that's where I kind of found that other grant that they did to the ORI. So right. they put out a lot of money.
It is a lot of money and very interesting topic. I'm gonna have to read this thing on the Conservancy. I'm interested in that. I used to listen to their podcast back in the day.
Yeah.
See, it was so bad Russ couldn't even follow it.
No, I was following it, but Bill put the story in. Sometimes he has thoughts.
So, yeah. So like, here's how much they gave. So the Firmware Liberation Project, the ARDC gave the Software Freedom Conservancy $150,000. And for the Strategic GPL Enforcement Initiative, they gave them $100,000. So.
Yeah, very nice.
Wow, all that was in there. I must have missed it.
No, that's actually, if you follow the link and go a little deeper into the story, you can find all that information. But yeah, definitely good stuff for the community.
All right, very good. So with that said, since that was sort of a quasi hybrid topic involving Linux and the Ham Shack, we will do one that does involve quite conveniently more Linux in the Ham Shack, and this is the latest release or the latest beta release, or RC. I guess RC is technically after beta, but
it's right before you get to
right GA. Before you get to the thing. Yeah. So WSJTX has put out 2.3.0 release candidate 1, which I downloaded and built and am unimpressed by. But Bill's probably going to tell us more about it than I really experienced, because there was one specific feature I was hoping was in there, and it's not. So
yeah, it's not in the changelog, right?
So you it's mentioned in the changelog.
Oh, is it?
It is, but it doesn't work. It's just not there. Yeah.
Someone apparently forgot to include the new screens for that compile build. But so this should have had a bunch of good stuff that included some new performance gains and a couple of new modes too, if I remember correctly. I didn't dig into it fully because we have covered this in the past. And I did want to say that now that the 2.3.0 builds are out there with the debs that are downloadable on the WSJTX site, you may have tried to do this, and it will now install on your 2004 devices, Ubuntu systems, without any issues. However, there are some caveats. If you happen to have had a JS8 call installed as well, it installs a, I'm using air quotes here so you can't see it, like a phantom package along with it called a WSJTX-data. And if you've run into an issue where you've run an install on this new RC1 build and it says it can't overwrite an existing file, and I think it's one of the icons, like the icon for the actual application, it's because you need to get rid of WSJTX-data. So you need to do an apt-remove WSJTX-data first, get rid of all of that garbage, and then install the RC1 build, and everything should run fine. Minus the fact that some of the features aren't actually there.
Well, I built 2.2.2, so I just went ahead and built 2.3.0 RC1 rather than install the package. The build went fine, had no problems with it, although the documentation that specifies the prefix, the install prefix, didn't work. So it installed it in /user/local, which is not where I wanted it, but all I did was just copy the stuff to where I did want it, so not a big deal. That thing with switching profiles and having the dark style sheet definitely does not work, and in fact, the dark style sheet itself is now broken, because, or at least it is in my build. I don't know if it works for you, but what happened for me was when I set it to start with the dark style sheet, when it starts up in the dark style sheet, and then when the pop-up comes up to say this is a release candidate build and will expire on blah, 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 the style sheet reverts to normal.
I didn't see that. I didn't try that either. I kept on seeing, like, even in previous builds, like, it occasionally does not want to start up with that in place. So let's see here. I'm just going to start mine up real quick to see.
Like I said, mine comes up and it looks dark until that pop-up. And as soon as the pop-up comes up,
The splash thing?
Yeah.
So I don't have I have the splash thing disabled, so I don't see that. So mine stays in dark mode when I run it.
Ooh, I might have to try that. What's the thing to disable? What's the flag to disable the splash?
I'm not sure. There was like a checkbox right on the splash screen that says, don't show this again.
Oh, I'll have to try that. I don't think I saw that, but.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So then again, this is a pre-release version. So of course it's an RC build. It's only going to be functional until November 17th. We'll probably see a few more RC builds in relation to this, but it should work fine for you to use as your daily driver until the GA is released. as long as you can get by all the other any other kind of random things that don't quite operate the way in which they said it would. So and yeah, I don't see.
I'm using 23RC1 and I just switched back to not using dark mode and it's fine. I mean, it works great. And as far as the performance gains, yeah, it's much faster. on my machine, it definitely is. I have a sort of underpowered ham shack computer.
Yeah.
And as far as just the startup of WSJTX from 222 to 230, I mean, it's probably 400% faster. So.
Yeah. Well, that's good then.
It is. It is. I'm not complaining necessarily. There's just that one feature I really want to work and it doesn't. So, but it's a RC, so I'm not, and I still have my 222 build available to me. So,
yeah, I actually just uninstalled mine when I did it just to get it out of the way. But only because I was running into that overwrite problem. So, but yeah, check it out. And they're definitely taking feedback. Russ has left some feedback already in their group. So, yeah, feel free and definitely join the WSJTX group over on Groups.io and, you know, give them feedback. And that way they know that, you know, the Linux people are out there using this quite quite frequently.
And well, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I'm going to switch topics, so you go ahead.
Don't you dare switch topics. Yeah, I was actually flipping back and forth between YouTube. I did a video on WSJT version 9 quite a few years ago, and I found it to be a really good piece of software. I may have to go take a look at this and see what's going on. I'm not in a position to run HF right now, but that doesn't mean I can't evaluate a piece of software.
No, WSJTX is an excellent piece of software for sure. I mean, it does everything you could ever want if you're doing weak signal. Anyway, so am I okay to switch topics now?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you say ma'am, you dick?
What, everybody calls you Mrs. Jones or Mr. Jones.
And I can call him dick because he really is dick. I mean, you know.
You would not believe how incredibly big one that I am. Anyway, y'all go ahead.
I just want to send a quick shout out to the folks over. I don't know if it's actually them or if it's community supported, but the documentation for Linux Mint has been really outstanding because I had a machine that was running Linux Mint 17.0, which if anybody is aware, 17.0 is very old. it was running 3.13 for a kernel to give you an idea. And there I have found step-by-step instructions on doing the walk-through migration of each of the iterations from 17.0 to 20. And this is the first distribution that I can recall where I have actually done all of the upgrades in sequence from 17.0 to 17.3 to 18 to 18.3 to 19 to 19.3 to 20, where they've worked every single time.
Wow.
Yes. And,
17 came out in May of 2014.
Yeah.
So just a wee bit old.
Hey, and he's on top of stuff though, you know.
But I'm truly excited about the fact that these upgrades have worked without a hitch. I mean, all the way up through to the current version. It's pretty impressive actually. I cannot say that about any of the other distributions I've ever run. And honestly, a revision this old on any of the other operating systems I run, even Linux ones, would have been a nuke and pave kind of thing. But yeah, it worked out well. So good on you, Linux Mint. Anyway, that's all I had to say about that.
I thought I was the only one running a copy of Linux Mint that was that old. I've got two laptops over here that have 17 on them.
Well, you can upgrade them if you want, and they won't break. So
I have to look into that. I'm thinking about running an XLX server.
Well, there you go. All right. So now, I don't care if you're busy or not, it's your turn.
Trying to do stuff.
And guess what? I'm going to throw you off this week because I reordered the lists. So.
Yeah, Cheryl, go ahead, baby, you got it.
All right, here we go. Oh yeah, you really did do it too, didn't you?
because it was getting old, and I used to do it every week. I would reorder the list.
Because you didn't want people to feel left out or whatever.
Right. So here we go. Social media round.
All right. So for this time, our Patreons are John Spriggs, Robert Pitts, Douglas Redder, David Jakeway, Darren King, Cubicle Nate, Erno Costales, Samuel Vimes, Peter Caffrey, Paul Griffith, Richard Gordon, Jonas Rulo, Donald Gever, Herb Garcia, Steve Sainer, Steve Metcalf, William Heckelman, Randolph Smith, and Andy Webster. For subscriptions, we have Michael Burdack, Kevin Ivey, Tony Coberly, Ronald Ikey, Thor Wiegman, Johnny Kinsey, Peter Spots, Fred Cole, Bill Pioter, Jeffrey Boris, Robert Halliday, Wayne Hale, John Clark, Steve Hepler, Michael Jopling, Roger Pereira, Howard Dittmer, Todd Bowers, Michael Carey, A. Taylor, Dylan Engel, Jim McKenzie, Bill Collins, Robert Black, Darren King, Randolph Smith, Robert Yerke, Steve Biella, Alan Wilson, Mark Farrell, and Jeff Zimmerman. On Facebook, we had Brian Olson. For Twitter, we had @Fernando.
Did you say Brian or Byron?
Sorry, I said Brian. Sorry, Byron Olson. On Twitter, we had @Fernando_Dodd, @WU1T_radio, @M7DSSM, @Verweedirk, @JWOC_15_, and @OhioLinux.
Ohio Linux Fest. Woo 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 woo.
On YouTube, we had Nick Mortel, @UrbanDruid, and Urban Druid. Sorry.
It's okay.
Sorry, I'm still stuck on Twitter. And on YouTube, again, we had Kyle Krieg, no mailing list people, and no merchandise sell people.
All right.
Well, that sucks.
It's not very often we have merchandise sales, but it seems like we go through these phases of nobody buys anything, and then 300 people buy something all in 1 week.
Well, the last round of merchandise sales we had was because of the expo, the virtual ham expo.
On the rest of it, Cheryl, I will tell you exactly what I tell my granddaughter when she does something good. Yay, baby.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that brings us down to the end of the show. And we usually, at the end of the show, mention the folks who are with us live in the chat room. And apparently, everybody's got something else to do this week, so it's okay.
Tonight was Thursday. Yeah, that's it.
We did have a couple of folks. We had our good old pal, Don, KC9ZMY, and our other good old pal, Jonas Rulo. So thanks for being here in the chat tonight. And we had Richard, too. I don't know. We need to include you in the chat room, but you are in the chat room.
You never include me when I'm in there.
Well, I don't include Bill or me either, because we're always in the chat room. So
yeah, always.
Always, always, always.
Always.
And I want you to know that Norman is still my head of security.
Thank goodness, because you need some type of security.
Yeah, well, I'm not too bright, and I might hurt myself if somebody ain't watching me.
Nope. Make sure Norman sits upright in the chair, because if he falls over and you step him on at night, it might hurt. So,
well, actually, he's got his own little corner. He's building a bow staff. I'm not sure if y'all are familiar with that, but he's building his own bow staff, and he's fixing to do some considerable butt whooping out in the yard with it. And he decided that I need to join in his practice, because working House of Blues, I might actually need to spin a pool cue on somebody or something. I don't know. It's really a convoluted plan, but he's working. It's the language barrier, y'all.
What, English versus English? I mean, or English versus Gnome?
Well, he's got a little bit of German in there, got a little bit of Irish in there, a little bit of English in there. I mean, it's all messed up. He's barely coherent. I have to get him drunk before I can understand him.
All right. So do you think you can do one of your Richard outros after Bill outros himself?
I'm not sure I have one.
You're not sure you have one, or you do have one?
I'm not sure I have one.
Come up with one quick.
Well, you got about 30 seconds.
Oh, my God. Pressure.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, that's pretty much how the show goes every week.
There you go.
So anyway, that being said, this has been episode number 372 of Linux in the Ham Shack. We thank everybody who was here live with us and who joins in afterwards and listens to the podcast after its release. We appreciate each and every one of you, and of course our paid supporters. We wouldn't be here without you. So tune in next time when we have another episode, because you know they keep coming,
of course,
and they increment by one every time. I know it's strange how that works, but anyway, let's get out of here. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm supposed to say something here. Doggone it. Well, you know, the only problem with Raspberry Pi is I keep getting it all over my fingers.